I'm willing to consider and fund some fixed cost increases.
Governor Parnell says some formulas are fine, but education funding needs accountability. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, ANWR legislation passes a House committee again.
Let's say it's like the size of Washington, D.C., but it's a very small footprint compared to Brutto Bay.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Governor Parnell today showed no support for the Senate's plans to increase the formula that determines how much state money goes to local school districts. The Senate Education Committee this week approved a bill raising the basic student allocation by $125 in this year's budget, $130 next year, and another $135 the year after. The governor says he has told lawmakers that he does not want to increase any formulas that drive state spending. He says under the current method, the legislature does little more then write a check, and he wants the education system to be more accountable and flexible.
I am willing to consider and fund some fixed cost increases, for example, heat. If it's demonstrated, and I believe it is demonstrated, that heating costs for next year will be up, then we ought to fund that on a fixed basis, and I'm willing to commit to that with legislators.
Parnell said he recognizes that such spending could go against his cap on it in this year's budget. However, he prefers the fixed cost spending approach. He said the state could become overrun by formulas similar, he says, to the way federal money is spent. Fairbanks Democrat Joe Thomas, the co-chair of the Education Committee that wrote the bill for the spending increase, says those one-time appropriations the governor likes are seen as cuts to the programs because schools can't use them for planning their activities in future years. He says there are unpredictable elements of spending that would have to be considered.
You know, we talk about pupil transportation, we talk about energy costs. Those are fluctuating numbers. Generally, they go up because everything, the running of the school, the running of the buses is affected by the fuel costs, the weather, things like that are hard to predict. We're probably never going to fund education to the amount that is needed, even what looks like a reasonable cost as you review the factors yourself.
The Senate bill is currently in the Finance Committee. ANWR legislation is back before the U.S. House. Before U.S. House members, the House Natural Resources Committee is offering legislation that, among other things, would open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to development. The language is part of a larger Republican jobs bill. Congressman Don Young says he's pleased that it passed out of committee.
This is the 12th time we look at the vote. It was a good vote, 29-13. So that's a good, solid vote, bipartisan vote, and I'm hoping it'll pass the House with the same type of enthusiasm. And everybody says, well, the Senate's not going to pass it. Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you don't pass something in the House, the Senate certainly is not going to pass it. So I'm going to send it over to them. We'll see what happens.
The bill claims it will open only 3% of the ANWR area to development. What that refers to is the so-called footprint of the actual oil infrastructure compared to the size of the entire refuge.
Let's say it's like the size of Washington, D.C. That's all the land that's going to be destroyed. It can give us approximately 39 barrels, a billion barrels of oil. And there's a lot of numbers, but it's a very small footprint compared to Brutto Bay. A much better system, much more technology has been developed over the years, and at 3% resulted in the possibility of a disturbance of land mass of the 19 million acres.
Democratic Senator Mark Begich says if the bill does pass the House and gets to the Senate, he'll be ready to push for its passage with a companion bill.
It's directional drilling into ANWR. trying to get some of the resistance away from the idea of drilling, but at the same time tapping into what could be anywhere between 3.5 billion barrels to as much as 10.5 billion barrels of oil of what we know today.
Senator Begich says he thinks there is a new tone in Washington that may mark increased cooperation when it comes to domestic energy development, in part because President Obama is pushing for more domestic energy supplies, but also because in the past few years, more states are dealing with energy development than they were in the past.
In the East Coast, you're dealing with shale gas. If you're in North Dakota and Colorado and Montana and places like that, you're dealing with huge development opportunities, as well as the southern states where, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, so forth, have had oil and gas. So suddenly the players are changing. And you know, in the last five years, over 50% of the U.S. Senate are new members. That's a huge opportunity for us.
Senator Murkowski's spokesman Robert Dillon says although Murkowski is in favor of ANWR development and she will continue to push for it, she says the House legislation will again face a tough uphill battle in the Senate. Also in the House energy legislation is a provision that would force a lease sale in the North Aleutian Basin, the Bristol Bay region. Congressman Young says although he thinks oil drilling and fisheries can coexist, he is urging Natural Resources Chairman Doc Hastings to put this issue off for a while because of the push for drilling in the Chukchi and Beaufort. Shell Oil is investing there now and was also the main company interested in Bristol Bay. And Young points out there's only so much equipment and cash to go around.
And that would not do as good because of the Beaufort Chukchi Sea and the availability of equipment and the money available for bidding these projects. If we're going to have these sales, then there should be the money has gotten for the highest price for this oil area.
Congressman Young says he'd like the Bristol Bay Area lease sale to be delayed for 5 years. The Alaska Wilderness League's Executive Director Cindy Shogun released a statement saying the ANWR effort is yet another example of House Republican leadership playing the same old tired political game with our nation's wildest refuge. The Obama administration last week announced a new planning rule for national forests, and today the Chugach National Forest will be among the first where the new rule will be used. The Chugach current plan was enacted in 2002 and is due for renewal soon anyway. According to regional forester Beth Pendleton, the Tongass National Forest in Southeast will be less affected by the new rule because many of its principles are already being applied there, such as watershed protections and standards for restoring areas that have been logged. She welcomes the new rule.
The new real strength of this planning rule is that focus on collaboration and the utilization of best science in that revision process.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack released the environmental impact statement needed to finalize the rule last week, saying it will mean stronger protections for forests, water, and wildlife while supporting rural economies.
We know these communities rely on the forests for jobs, for clean air and clean water. We believe that this framework will take their concerns into consideration. We also believe that if an amendment or a change is required, we think it will take less time and less money to accomplish that change than under previous efforts.
The Chugach Forest covers about 5.5 million acres, including the Copper River Delta, much of the Kenai Peninsula, and wilderness areas in Prince William Sound. Pendleton says she expects the new rule to be helpful in revising the land use plan for the Chugach.
We will be doing that under a new, more modern planning rule that I believe is going to better reflect science, public values, and knowledge on how to create and implement more effective land management plans.
The rule requires planners to address climate change impacts on the forests. The environmental impact statement for the new rule is out for public comment. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a push to create an Alaska Native Language Preservation Council.
Our evaluations reveal that students do better academically when they are taught native language and culture.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. 8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer.
every cigarette makes you sick. So quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
No more emissions tests in Anchorage. That was the decision of the Anchorage Assembly at its meeting last night. KSKA's Daisha Eaton explains.
The once federally mandated emissions, or IM, program required drivers to pay for a $60 to $70 vehicle emissions test every 2 years. The Environmental Protection Agency approved ending the program in January, saying it was no longer needed to protect air quality. The Assembly agreed to phase the program out in 6 months, but Mayor Dan Sullivan proposed ending IM testing early. And he got his wish when the Assembly voted to end testing at their meeting late Tuesday evening, but not before testimony from concerned business owners, including Richard Klein.
We were told that we had 6 months after the EPA made their answer to Anchorage to end the program. We were told that. And I would like to start off that, you know, you promised us, the IM industry, that we would have the 6 months. You should honor your vote. You should honor what you've told us. We're business people. We have to make decisions ahead of time.
While business owners complained, Mayor Sullivan called the program, quote, government bureaucracy at its absolute worst, end quote, and claimed if it went 6 more months, it would require 45,000 cars to be tested at a total cost of $3 million to drivers. Assemblyman Paul Honeman, who's running against Sullivan for mayor, said he was merely pandering to voters during an election year. Some questioned the addition of a municipal tax that was added onto vehicle registrations just as the emissions test was being eliminated. Assemblymember Harriet Drummond confirmed the tax had been added.
$70 minimum on an 8-year-old car or older, and right, and sliding scale up to $150 for a new car, right, every 2 years. Which this is on top of the IM test.
Which goes to the city, right?
That's right. The state collects it and gives it to the city.
The municipal tax was added to vehicle registrations in January. The Assembly voted 6-5 to eliminate emissions testing early. The program ends March 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Two rural Alaskans have been named to the Federal Subsistence Board. There is currently just one rural member on the board that manages fish and wildlife for subsistence users on federal public lands and waters. KNOM's Ben Matheson has more.
Anthony Christensen from Heidelberg and Charles Brower from Barrow will represent rural subsistence users. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar named the two to the board after reviewing more than 30 candidates. Tim Tawarik from Unalakleet is chair of the Federal Subsistence Board. He says Christensen and Brower bring the perspective of Alaskans who directly participate in subsistence activities.
I think what they're going to bring in to the board is their personal experience, personal perspective of their region, and that's going to give us a better coverage of the whole state. I think it'll bring a subsistence user's perspective. To me, that's probably the most important aspect of having the two additional guys.
In addition to Tawarik, the public chair, the five current members of the board are high-level officials from agencies like Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Christensen serves as mayor of Heidelberg and is the natural resources director for the Heidelberg Cooperative Association, a federally recognized tribe. Brower is special assistant to the vice president of Barrows Village Corporation, Ukpeavik Nupiat Corporation. He's the former wildlife department director for the North Slope Borough and has served on the Nanuk Commission and Eskimo Walrus Commission. At a meeting earlier this month, the board advanced a working group to help develop the federal government's tribal consultation policy. President Obama has directed federal agencies to develop comprehensive policies. Tawarik says the Secretary of the Interior in turn called on the Federal Subsistence Board to review how it consults with tribes.
To give the tribes in Alaska more say in how the Federal Subsistence Board develops regulations. And it's turning out to be a real good and exciting process to get tribal issues on the table before we make a decision. So it's a good move, I think, on the federal government side to initiate this tribal consultation process.
On the working group are agency native liaisons and members of regional advisory councils. The board has seen a draft policy and will continue the process this May. The board delayed action on rural, non-rural determinations. Every decade, the board reviews rural classifications based on new census data. Communities like Kodiak, Sitka, Saxman, and Prudhoe Bay stand to lose their rural determination this year after a decision made in 2007. The board is currently reviewing the entire process of making determinations and will hold off on the individual communities until the larger review is done. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
The Alaska Senate's State Affairs Committee heard testimony yesterday on Senator Donnie Olson's bill to create the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. The council would assess statewide language policy and programs and seek to advance the most cost-effective program. The council would meet at least twice a year and submit reports to the governor and legislature every 2 years. Annette Evans-Smith, the president of the Alaska Native Heritage Center, spoke to the importance of Alaska's native languages.
Our languages make our state unique. They define a place. They are an incredible resource, I think, for our state. And it is critical that we take proactive measures now to strengthen our languages while language speakers do exist. And Alaska Native groups are interested and willing and committed to revitalizing our languages for our future.
The committee heard about the status of the state's native languages. Inupiaq and some Athabascan languages are classified as severely endangered. A number of Aleut and Southeast languages are critically endangered, and the Eyak language lost its last fluent speaker, Chief Marie, in 2008. Dr. Rosita Wuerl is the president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. She stressed the need to actively teach native languages in addition to documentation efforts. She says the health and acceptance of native language is a big determinant in students' self-esteem, which in turn affects academic performance. Wuerl says multilingual instruction programs have impacts beyond language.
They are also designed to improve the academic status of our students by advancing critical thinking, knowledge, and science. Our evaluations reveal that students do better academically when they are taught native language and culture.
Senator Albert Kukesh of Angoon said that passage of the bill would send a strong message from the state of Alaska.
We have buy-in by the tribes. We have buy-in by the universities. We have buy-in by the nonprofits in the state. We do not have buy-in by the state of Alaska. This bill, if it passes and goes to the governor's desk to get signed, will be the first official act of buy-in by the state of Alaska to help preserve the languages in the state.
Scott Ruby, the director of the Community and Regional Affairs Division in the Department of Commerce, says the state administration supports the bill as written. The council would cost $240,000 the first year and $216,000 in following years. That would be comprised of language experts from across the state appointed by the governor, plus two non-voting legislators from the Bush caucus. The committee held the bill and will be taking amendments in the coming days. The House State Affairs Committee will also hear a version of the bill.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Nominations are due by February 14th. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
A trade group and a native corporation are teamed up to promote a program that attracts movie and TV productions to Alaska. The Alaska Film Group and Nana Regional Corporation, owned Pixic LLC, are pushing the state to extend its film incentive program. Film Group board member and Pixic project manager Deborah Silt says the program is credited with increasing the number of movies and television shows shot in Alaska.
Senate Bill 23 brought the movies that we've seen here come to date, that being The Big Miracle. It brought The Frozen Ground. It brought Play Kids. It probably brought a handful of reality TV shows that have come through the state, not necessarily all of them Anchorage-centric. So it's brought about a half dozen productions to date.
Schilt spoke to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce about the importance of the incentive program yesterday. The program offers tax credits to production companies based on how much they spend in the state, hire locally, and shoot in rural Alaska. The Alaska Film Incentive Program passed during the Palin administration and is scheduled to sunset in 2013. A bill to extend it is being considered by the legislature. The Associated Press reported last month that Representative Anna Faircloth is concerned that some productions cast Alaska in a bad light and wants an audit to better determine how the program is benefiting Alaskans. The film group attributes recent years' film productions with employing thousands of state residents and supporting hundreds of Alaska businesses in recent years. Schultz says supporters are pushing for a 10-year extension to provide long-term stability for the industry in Alaska.
Producers frequently take 1 to 10 years to develop a project from concept to getting it up on the silver screen. Without a guarantee that there will be incentives here in place for them, they will take their project elsewhere. So it gives them confidence and security and stability. It gives an Alaskan business owner that wants to invest in infrastructure like equipment confidence in knowing there's someone that's going to rent his equipment 5 years from now.
Evergreen Films is building a multi-million dollar film production studio in Anchorage. Schultz says a longer-term incentive program will also give young Alaskans interested in a film career confidence there will be jobs for them in state. University of Alaska Fairbanks Film Studies Program Director Maya Selganik says students have already participated in projects attracted to Alaska by the incentive program, and there's good future work potential.
There's a lot of jobs. You've seen a credit on a film screen, you know, and so when you see that list of credits, we have to try and provide those jobs here in Alaska. So it's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of opportunity.
Selganik says the UAF program is applying for some of the nearly $500,000 the state has put forward for film production workforce training. Fairbanks will have a third major air carrier this summer. United Airlines is returning to the Fairbanks market after a several-year absence. United will run daily flights between Denver and Fairbanks, June 7th through August 27th. United joins fellow summer flyer Frontier and year-round carriers Alaska Airlines in the Fairbanks market. Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau CEO Deb Hickok says the additional airline should equate to more seasonal traffic.
We get extra lift this summer. Which in the short term is a good thing. In the long term, our long term goal is to have another provider year round. So an airline like United might have that capability.
Tourism is still recovering from the recession. Hickok says Alaska is expecting improvement in 2012, but numbers are still forecast to be short of a 2008 peak.
So it'll be a challenging year to have another airline on the ground in some ways, and so we're hoping that Frontier and United and Alaska Airlines will still be successful together, and we hope we're on our way to, you know, offering competitive airfare in the long term for not only our guests at Fairbanks but for the residents.
Hickok says competition usually equates to better deals for consumers. She cites the state's top carrier, Alaska Airlines' recent announcement of its Club 49 member benefit program as evidence of an increasingly competitive Alaska market. Denver-based Frontier joined the Fairbanks summer market in 2010. Some school workers in Haines are getting retirement investments returned to them early in checks as large as $22,000 after the district alerted them that Social Security took too much out of their paychecks. From KHNS in Haines, Tara Bicknell has more.
Checks totaling $380,000 will be going out to Haynesboro School District employees past and present after the district determined that too much Social Security was withheld from non-teacher paychecks for several years. The district's been working with lawyers to put a sum to the Social Security mistake that dates back to 2002.
We've been, you know, trying to figure it out as it's something that, you know, initially began with the consolidation of the borough and the city.
Michael Beyer is the school district superintendent. The office first learned about the discrepancy 2 years ago and has been aiming towards this resolution since.
I didn't find out about it until, you know, we were told by Retirement Benefits, who were doing an audit in late 2009, early 2010, that we needed to basically stop paying Social Security for PERS employees, and as was the agreement back when the school district was part of the borough, the third-class borough.
The changes affect only school employees that were enrolled in the Public Employees Retirement System, or PERS, from 2008 to 2010, current PERS employees and retired teachers. Other teachers and substitute teachers use a separate retirement system and are not affected. Each of the involved individuals received a letter explaining the reimbursement earlier this month.
Just those employees who have worked after that date, and that would include all current and retired and those who quit.
That happens to be 75 former and current Haynes workers, which will each be receiving checks totaling as little as $6 or as much as $22,000. Retired maintenance supervisor Dwight Nash is one of them.
As I understand it now, the monies that the district withheld from me will come back to me in a lump sum check. And when the Social Security system returns the money that the district provided in my behalf, they will count that as a earnings for me with taxable deductions and so forth. So I'll be issued two checks.
That's one check for withholding the employees already paid taxes on, and another they'll be responsible for paying taxes on if they don't reinvest in another retirement plan. The school is looking into the Supplemental Benefit System, or SBS, the state-run retirement program that the borough uses. It would be a retirement benefits program in addition to PERS that employees can contribute to. A representative from the program is expected to be at the school Wednesday with more information on the program.
We just want them to know what that looks like, what their options are, you know, with that program and how that looks. And we also want to know whether they could roll over any of their money that they had contributed to Social Security into that program. What rollover options might there be? You know, and that's why we have a counselor, an SBS counselor coming.
The Haynes School currently employs 26 certificated teachers, 3 administrators, and 34 full-time and part-time classified employees. For more information on SBS, go to the State Retirement Benefits website. In Haynes, I'm Tara Bicknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Nome, and Tara Bicknell in Haynes. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
And by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Learn more by participating in one of their informational teleconferences to be held in January. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.